Good evening. This is Amanda Manero with Veterans Voice here on 790 KABC. I am a veteran advocate and the managing attorney at the Veterans Law Group, and we have worked within the area of helping veterans with their disability compensation and the appeals department for over 25 years. So this show is about kind of helping you answer some questions, walk you through the process, maybe a little bit of education as far as, you know, how does a veteran get the benefits that they're entitled to, how to navigate some of that red tape and bureaucracy at the VA. And then sometimes just coming down to giving you guys a little bit of interviews or having interviews with organizations that are helping veterans. We get a little off that topic now and then. But when we're live, which we are live this evening, we love to take your calls, whether you're a veteran, a family member, or somebody who has just something to contribute to the conversation. You're always welcome to join us. The number here is 800-222-5222. It's 800-222-5222. And again, my name is Amanda, and I'm the host here at the Veterans Voice, but periodically I'll bring on somebody else, either from my office, who can help kind of contribute to the conversation. And so this evening I've brought on Star, who's been with us before. She is a paralegal, a U.S. Air Force veteran, has walked through this process before and has walked many veterans through this process. So I would like to bring her on and have her kind of contribute to the conversation with some of the topics that we're going to talk about tonight. I've got a few those things in mind, but if you have a particular question and you want to join us, I will be happy to move to a topic that is helpful to our current listeners, people who are calling in and navigating the process. So Star, welcome. Thank you for joining me this evening.
Thank you. Always happy to be here.
Yeah, we've got a lot going on these days, huh?
We do.
There is, it's one of those things that I say all the time that I wish I didn't have this job because I wish it wasn't necessary. And you certainly shouldn't have to hire an attorney to get through this process. But our phones ring off the hook and there's not a lack of need out there. That's for sure. I know you've seen quite a bit of that lately.
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. So again, we're taking calls live. I'll repeat the number periodically so you guys can get it, 800-222-5222. Before we went on air, Star and I were messaging a little bit together about what we're going to talk about tonight or kind of start the conversation with. And we've talked in the past, if you're a listener to the show, we've talked quite a bit about, you know, the three things you have to show in order to get compensated for a disability that happened in service. So that's, you know, an injury in service or something happened to you in service, you've got a current diagnosis of something, and then there's a link between the two. And so tonight I wanted to dig in a little bit, as I mentioned when we were launching the show, that our law office works exclusively in appeals. So that means that a veteran has received a decision that says, yes, you're service connected, or no, you're not, or if you are, here's your percentage and your effective date, and all of those things are appealable. And so I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the different areas of different levels of appeal, try to not get into too complicated, but as the VA has done, they have complicated things. I have my opinion about how complicated the new appeals process is that launched in 2019. Star, I'm going to give you a second. Give me your opinion.
Yeah, they definitely, I feel, made it a little bit more complicated than what they already had it. So,
right. When people ask me about it, so in there was the appeals management, appeals modernization act. Sorry, appeals modern. So we call it the AMA, and that was passed in 2017, 2018. It didn't become effective until 2019. Unless you were in one of the RAMP programs, which was they were offering the ability for veterans to get involved in the new appeals process early. Now, very little substantively changed in the law, like when it comes to, it didn't really change who was eligible or any of those kind of things. It just changed the process of the appeals, the forms, the deadlines, things like that. So when I've been asked over the years, like, hey, did it help? Is the VA getting better? And I always say that, you know, you can't really take a system that wasn't working, of people who weren't working their current process and procedures correctly in a lot of circumstances, give them another one that they have to do simultaneously and expect it to get better. And that's one of the things we should definitely talk about is that they didn't shut down the old appeals process. If you're in the old appeals process, what they call legacy now, if you hear the VA talk about it, you're in the legacy process unless you choose to move over into the new AMA. And so it didn't shut down one system and open a new one. It just opened a new one, which is interesting. And I would imagine if you want to, you know, jump in, Star, and give a little bit of the three different levels of appeal or ways in which you can appeal a decision. You want to start with me?
So I think that's one of the things that complicated it, is just they don't really put too much out there on, you know, which direction to go or what to do. So with the three, there are, you know, different forms on each one. So you have the supplemental claims appeal, you have the higher level appeals, and then you have the Board of Veterans Appeals. So they're all different, basically, levels that you can appeal at. And they all take a different form to appeal with because they're all a different method that you're going to appeal. And I don't know if you want me to go into more detail with that.
Well, I'll jump in, and I just want to repeat the number here. If somebody is listening in and wants to talk about their appeal or their case, I'd be happy to do that here on air, 800-222-5222. Essentially, what it comes down to is, like, in the old legacy process, it was you got a decision, you had a certain number of days to file the next level of appeal. It was one form, you filed it. And then there wasn't a whole bunch of options. So I guess in the part of the VA's pitch, when they were trying to really promote the AMA, was for them to say, hey, you know, you have a lot more options now. And but in that process, you also lost some certain rights, like a hearing at the decision review officer level, at the VA level. You can't get a hearing now unless you go up to the board. So there's certain things that were lost, but also I think complicating it, coming back down to, okay, which one should I do? And then in addition to that, you can choose different options for different issues. So say you have a PTSD claim that got denied and you have a back claim that's rated at 0%, you have to have new evidence to get into the supplemental claim lane. So if you don't have any new evidence, you only have two other options. But what if you have new evidence for your back claim, but not for your PTSD? Then you effectively are separating those two, and you might be waiting on one decision for a supplemental and one decision on a higher level review. So it just kind of goes from there. It gets a little more complicated. Before I go into a little bit deeper on each one of these as far as strategy, Star, if you'd let us know, there's also three options if you appeal to the board, correct?
Yes.
Okay, tell us what those options are.
So, oh man, I'm totally blanking right now.
That's right. I'll help you up. You have the ability to do a direct review, which means I'm not submitting any more evidence. I just want to go to the board in Washington instead of my local VA. And then you have that option. Then you have the option that, hey, I want to submit new evidence, and the VA will give you 90 days from the time that you file the claim or the appeal to the board to submit new evidence. And then the last option is now the only option for a hearing anymore. And that is, I'm going to the board and I'm asking for a hearing. And we'll, you know, it's always on my list. I'm happy to discuss the ins and outs of why somebody would want a hearing versus not want a hearing. And a lot of it is very strategic and why you choose one over the other. Same kind of thing of why you go into a supplemental versus a higher level review. So let me just key in a little bit on this, and you can jump in if you'd like, Star. So your first option, again, is supplemental, higher level review, or board appeal. A supplemental claim is essentially you're saying, hey, I have new evidence, or I have evidence that the VA hasn't considered yet, and so I would basically like to submit that evidence and have you guys kind of reconsider my claim with that new evidence. And that is going back through kind of the initial claims process, and or to the at least the people who handle initial claims. So they might do some development on it. They might, you know, ask you for any medical history. They might schedule you for a C&P exam. It's kind of like doing a new claim again, except you've filed for it before, but you're submitting new evidence. A higher level review is a situation in which you have no new evidence to submit, and you just want somebody who has a little bit more experience to re-review the case from the beginning. or from the beginning, it's kind of like if you're familiar with the old legacy process, it's saying, I want a decision review officer to review my claim and give a second opinion. But they won't consider any new evidence at all, even if you submit it. And you have a one-time option to have an informal teleconference with the person who's reviewing your case. And typically us as representatives handle those. But it's really just to make some sort of legal argument, a point to whatever their error was. You can't give testimony or anything like that. So then the other option is the board. And the board is the Board of Veteran Appeals, the board in Washington, who is kind of that next level of review. You're dealing with decision makers there that are typically, or are judges. They're administrative law judges. They have legal background, all of that. So you're dealing with just like a completely different expertise level of the person who's making the decision on your claim. So there's different, you know, reasons and why we would do that. Like I would say, generally, if we know we're going to need the veteran's testimony, if there's some sort of, you know, you don't have evidence of an injury, or you don't have evidence in service, or you don't have evidence of your, you know, mental health or those types of things, you would want to go to the board so you can actually talk to the judge up at the Board of Veterans Appeals. I would love to get into a little bit of timeline here as far as, you know, a lot of times veterans and veteran service officers will advise the veteran to choose the appeals process, and it's a lot of times based upon time, like how quickly do you need a decision? And Star, I'm sure you've seen just over the years of working with us how much that has changed from when AMA first launched to when people are actually getting a decision ultimately.
Yes.
So what I'm looking, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, it's one of those things that it all depends. It's a case by case basis. And you always have to be aware that, you know, it's not always going to be just because you did a certain appeal that it's going to be done right away. It's the factors of, you know, what reviewer you got and mm-hmm. what type of evidence you have on how long your case is actually going to take during the appeal process.
Yeah, and it's interesting, and we'll address this when we get back after the commercial break, but I'm looking at a document that the VA is still to this day including in all of their decisions, which is, here's your three different options, and then here's our goal timeline to complete the actual, whether you do a supplemental, a higher level review, or a board. But then also on my screen, I pulled up the annual board report to Congress, which addresses the actual timelines, so their goal versus actual, and we'll get into that when we get back. You're listening to Amanda Manier with Star here on the Veterans Voice on 790 KABC. We'll be right back.
And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt.
Good evening. Welcome back. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice. We are chatting this evening about all things related to veterans' disability claims. If you've got a claim that you're working on, or a family member who does, or just has a question generally about the process, our office has been working in this industry exclusively for over 25 years. So there's very few of the things that I haven't seen, and I unfortunately generally say that nothing surprises me anymore, but every once in a while the VA will surprise me. And I kind of, every year, the Board of Veteran Appeals is required to submit an annual report to Congress that is all about what's happening within the board and generally with appeals. And I get a little bit nerded out about it because I find it very interesting how, you know, I mean, they have to be honest when it comes down to it, but they do try to sugarcoat things at times. So one of the most common questions that I get, and I'm joined here this evening with Star, who's a paralegal in my office and a U.S. Air Force veteran, and I'd love for her to chime in here, is one of the most common questions I get is, why does this process take so long? And I would imagine you probably get the same, Star.
I do, all of the time.
So what's your answer to that? I mean, you and I have definitely talked about it before, but what is your, as a U.S. Air Force veteran, like what's kind of your perspective on it and a paralegal here for over 6 years?
Yeah, so usually my answer to most people is that there are a whole bunch of reasons on why it can take longer for some than others. You know, you could get a raider that doesn't know what they're doing. You could, you know, that's new to the game. You can have evidence that just, you know, needs more supporting background evidence. There are so many different details that go into decisions that can make it harder to prove than other people. So, you know, a lot of times it's like, oh, well, my buddy got something back in a couple of months, but mine's been taking, you know, years to happen. And for me, it's, you know, well, sometimes, you know, you just got the short stick, and you just have to stick with it because you just need that little bit extra help or a little bit extra evidence to help show what's needed. But there are different routes that you can go through that can help. But just sometimes, you know, it just, you have to wait the VA out and do the different appeal routes. But some of them take longer just because there are so many veterans that are in the system just because of all the mistakes that do happen.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you brought that up, because the first thing that I thought of is the number of cases that, you know, when I was, it would have been about 2015, right around that, that we had in Southern California here, we had a specific decision review officer that was issuing decisions that were, well, terrible. Like, there's no other way to put it. And it seemed to become more about our office than it did about the veteran, which was just extremely disappointing. And thankfully, you know, to the VA's credit, they did pull him off of our cases. But I'm still settling cases from him. Just recently, we got finally a positive decision from the board on that. And that's an example of sometimes just, you know, and you know, without getting into detail, it's just he was clearly, I didn't have to ask him. He was clearly not a combat veteran. He didn't seem to have the compassion for that. I believe he was a veteran, but I don't think that he had the understanding of what people were actually going through. So yes, you can end up with a bad person like that. But there's also a lot of times things that it's a complicated issue. So one of the, a lot of the cases that we work on, you know, obviously if they're easy and they're straightforward, you don't need an attorney to work on your case. The VA does get it right at times, as much as I'm kind of bashing on the VA this evening, they do get it right at times. So I do want to, you know, acknowledge that. And there are some bad apples. There are people that I think are lazy. And then sometimes it comes down to, it's just a hard case, you know, under the letter of the law, the VA can only do so many things. And so you've got to, you know, give them, I look at my job, or our job is to make it easy for the VA to grant the case. So put all the ducks in a row, so when it finally does get seen by somebody, that they, it's easy for them to grant the case. So we are taking calls live this evening. We are taking calls live this evening. If you've got questions about your claim, you can call us at 800-222-5222. Hold that thought, star. I believe we have Dawn from Glendale on the line. The question? Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question, because I put him in for a sleep apnea case. And the VA doctor had wrote a letter saying that he felt it was service-connected, and I submitted it to the supplemental claim, but it didn't seem like they actually, well, they didn't comment on his letter. So my question was, is this something I should go to, like, the higher level review, a board appeal?
If I was looking at your decision, the very first thing I would look at is the list of evidence to make sure that it's listed in the list of evidence, because the VA is notorious for misplacing evidence. So if it's listed in evidence and they're acknowledging that they looked at it, even if they didn't then discuss it in the decision, if it's not in that list of evidence, then I would, and you have proof that you submitted it, I would go higher level review, do an informal conference, and tell the person on the informal conference that it was submitted on X day, and they will then address it at that time. Is it listed in the evidence?
I don't have it here right in front of me. I don't know if it is or not.
Okay. If it isn't listed, so I would go higher level review, because if it is in there and you submit it, they're just going to come back and reject it and say no new and relevant information because it's already been, you know, addressed. If they don't address, either way, I would ultimately say probably the higher level review is the best route to go, because you can talk to them and say, hey, you didn't consider my evidence, or you can talk to them and say, you didn't even discuss my evidence and say why you chose, you know, one examiner over the other. Did you have a CNP exam for it or just your private doctor?
Well, actually, I had a VA. I'm being treated for it by the VA.
Uh-huh.
So the VA doctor wrote the letter.
Okay. And did they even send you for a comp and pen exam?
No.
Okay. So then generally what I'm looking at, if you go to the last couple pages of a decision, it's going to tell you why they denied it. And they may have denied it with just saying there was no complaints of any sort of sleep issues in service. And under that, they're not necessarily required to get you a comp and pen exam. Because they're saying, okay, yeah, even if your doctor says, you know, you have sleep apnea, then where's the proof that you had something in service? Does that make sense? So that would be snoring. Yeah. That would be, you know, if you ever complained of insomnia or feeling tired or anything like that. They generally start with the STRs and try to figure out if there's anything in there that should trigger an exam. So the fact that they didn't send you for a CNP exam is the question.
And you say they start with an STR. What's an STR?
The service treatment records. I just mean the VA, when they're looking at a decision or looking at a claim, they're usually going to start by looking in your service treatment records to see if you ever complained about anything related to what you're claiming.
Yeah, because what I was saying to the doctor. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So what I was saying to the doctor, he agreed with me that due to my combat-related service when I was in the Navy, you know, you're up at all hours of the night and you're not getting any sleep. And so I was saying it kind of went with me in my ways. Even said after I came back, I was keeping it up and still has not gotten any better. So that was my claim, and I guess I don't know if it was ever in the service treatment record. But.
Did your wife submit a statement?
No.
Okay, so I would also look at that too, is having your wife on a VA form 4138, which is a sworn statement. When she signs at the bottom, it says, you know, this is to the best of my knowledge and, you know, swearing that they're saying the truth, that if there's nothing in your service treatment records that talks about complaints about sleeping or anything like that, but your wife, who you knew at the time, would say, I noticed a change. He didn't used to snore, now he does. He didn't used to wake up, you know, not breathing, and when he came back from, say, deployment or something like that, then he does. That's considered what they call lay evidence, to say, okay, it's not in your service treatment records, but your wife, who knew at that time, is essentially giving a written testimony to the fact that you did have those things in service. So I would probably start with that.
Oh, okay. And then ask for the higher level review.
Yeah, and if you get the sworn statement, though, then you would go supplemental because it's new evidence. But I would say start with a higher level review, because here's what I'm looking at. A higher level review is somebody who has 10 plus years of experience processing claims, where if you go supplemental, you're going back before a rater who may have been processing claims for 6 months. And so there's a different level of understanding. And if you've already submitted a doctor's letter that shows some evidence in your favor, I would argue with the higher level review that they should have sent you for a CNP exam. Say the higher level review comes back and says, we don't agree with you, we agree with the previous decision. Then you can go supplemental claim and submit the written testimony from your wife. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. Awesome.
You said that sent me for a CMP exam, you said?
They should have sent you, if you had submitted from your doctor that they believe it's related to your service, they probably should have gotten at least another medical opinion, like a CNP exam. So we make that argument all the time, that it's like if somebody complained about, you know, any sort of issues, and if it was enough to trigger an exam, the bar is very low to trigger an examination. And the fact that they didn't get you one, I think you can argue that that was a mistake because you have evidence in your record that shows somebody, a medical professional, said that it should be related to service. So I would start there. And feel free to give us a call back if any of that is not clear. We're here every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 o'clock. All right, I got to run to a break. Thank you for calling in. This is Amanda with The Veteran's Voice. We'll be right back. Stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American where it leads. Good evening. Welcome back. This is Amanda Manier with The Veteran's Voice. I am the host here on 790 KABC every Tuesday night at 7 to 8 o'clock. Often we're here live, or most of the time we're here live. Every once in a while we're not. But this evening we are live taking your calls, answering questions about VA disability claims process. Any particular questions you have about your VA disability claim or appeal that you would like us to address. We've been working in this area for about 25 years, and that's all we do. So we've probably very little that I haven't seen if you've got a current case that's pending. I'm also joined here by Star. She's one of the paralegals in our office, and she's been with us for about 6+ years. She's also a U.S. Air Force veteran and has navigated this process with her and many of her family members. So welcome back, Star.
Thank you.
I did want to address something before we went to the break. We had a question that was regards to a sleep apnea claim, and I only really addressed it as what we call a direct service connection, which it means, you know, you had complaints in service, you had symptoms in service, and maybe you weren't diagnosed until later. That happens a lot of times because a lot of people don't know that they're having symptoms of a condition until they learn about it later and they're out of the service. But there's also another way about going about getting service connected for sleep apnea, and that's through a secondary condition for a mental health. And generally the way that we do that, the VA has been left and right denying it related to PTSD, but we've gotten quite a few through that because it is, sleep apnea is commonly known as something that you can get related to weight gain. And there's a lot of studies out there that show that PTSD, depression, anxiety, people who are suffering with those kind of things can also have a weight gain. And so if the VA is saying, hey, your C&P says that your sleep apnea is due to weight gain, not due to your PTSD, there's kind of, you can make that connection in that way. So I don't know if there's anything else you want to contribute to that, Star. That's something that we've been working on for a while and had quite a bit of success on.
Yeah, there was actually a couple of things from the last segment that I did want to just kind of add on as well. One of the things that was brought up too is the C&P exams, and when you had asked, you know, if he had been to a C&P exam. And I get this question all the time, you know, like, well, why didn't they send me to one? So I would like to bring up, you know, just to everybody out there listening, that they should always be sending you to a C&P exam if they are looking into that current diagnosis and looking into giving you a rating. Because even if you have your own medical documentation or medical opinion that you have submitted to the VA is always going to get their own medical opinion in order to give you that percentage and find that rating that you belong at. And so I always get that question of like, well, why did they send me to a C&P exam if I already sent them an independent medical exam? So
let me give a very quick clarification on that, because the VA is not necessarily always going to. If they have some evidence that helps support your side, that it is service connection, they should get you a C&P exam. You know, I get that. We both, I know, get that all the time. But why did the VA do this? Why did they not do that? It's like, well, I can tell you a million reasons why they did or didn't do something. Doesn't mean they were right or wrong in doing it. There's claims in which you do it, but I do see a lot of times, like, a veteran file a claim for depression and the VA looks at their service treatment records and says, well, you didn't complain about depression in service, so they didn't even get an exam, where maybe what should have been claimed is mental health. And especially if they were in a combat zone, that automatically will trigger it. So that bar I was talking about is relatively low to trigger an exam. But if you can imagine, that, you know, if the VA is trying to save on resources, if they're trying, if you've got a rater who's maybe new and just processing claims, nothing in service treatment records, and then they end up denying it based upon that. So again, the bar is very low. Even just a lay statement of saying, my husband snored in service, that should trigger an exam. It's very low.
Yeah. And then another thing I wanted to point out too is, you know, always point out, you know, when you first start the process, make sure that you're putting those medical records together to show what you're trying to get the VA to grant you. So they have to go through, and one of the reasons that, you know, sometimes it may take a while for them to get you a decision back is because there's sometimes hundreds to thousands of medical documents that they're going through. There's the service treatment records, there's the service after the treatment that's after service. And so they're going through, you know, page by page, and most of the time they're scanning. You know, they're not going to be looking like super in detail for certain things. And so I just like to point out to every veteran that, you know, if you know in your documentation, like where you were treated for something, highlight that and show them exactly where your treatment was, because that's going to benefit your case.
Absolutely. And just a reminder, we are taking calls live this evening. I forgot to give the number out. Sorry about that. 800-222-5222 if you'd like to join us. I'm here talking with Star. We're talking about some of the VA issues when you're working on processing a claim. The other thing that I would say, I was just remembering that triggered memory of a case that I worked on where, you know, now a lot of stuff is electronic records, and so the doctors are typing in to the system what their notes are from your time in service, but it wasn't that too long ago that you're still dealing with a doctor who's doing, as we all know, it's kind of a joke that doctors have terrible handwriting, but they may scribble something on a paper for the time that you went to go see medical 25 years ago, and you know that it was because it was there for your low back. And if you point that out to the VA, it's like, oh, okay, that cursive writing does say low back. But if they were just scanning it, like you're saying, they may not be able to see that it says low back. So I had worked with a veteran in particular who had a skin cancer issue and a low back injury. And we went through service treatment records and we basically pulled certain things, highlighted them, and then annotated it that said, basically, this says this. And that was helpful. And again, going back to, if you can make it easy for the VA to grant your case, then you're more likely to get granted. And that's what we see our job is.
Exactly. And then one other thing that I was wanting to point out too is that I have actually seen a lot recently with cases that have been coming in is that the VA is switching from when you request a higher level review, they are switching over to a supplemental claim during their review. So I wouldn't be surprised if you ask for a higher level review and you get a decision back without an informal conference with them saying, well, we found new evidence. Right. And so we put you over into the supplemental claim.
Yeah. So basically what's happening there, they will list it as there was a duty to assist error. So for example, in the caller that we just had before with that sleep apnea claim, that it wouldn't surprise me if that was the decision that he got from a higher level review where they looked at, okay, he submitted some information from a doctor that supported his claim. Under duty to assist, we should have gotten him an exam. So what they'll do is they will kick it over to essentially a supplemental claim because there needs to be development done. There needs to be something ordered. And the higher level reviewer can only make a decision on what was previously in the record. And so they're going to kick it over. So you're right. Don't be surprised if it gets kicked over to the supplemental claim, but that's because they're doing development. They will not, however, kick it over to the board. They will always kick it, I want to say down the hill, because exactly. As you go up the appeals process, it's you have those initial claims, you have a higher level review, then you have the board, then you have the Court of Appeals of Veterans Claims, and then the Federal Circuit, and then the Supreme Court. So a veteran has the right to appeal all the way up to the Supreme Court. But there's only, you know, within the local, and I say local VA, and I don't mean that in the sense because they're handling claims all over the country. So if I'm in, you know, Los Angeles and file a claim, somebody at the Pittsburgh office may handle it. So when I say that, it's just that we're dealing with the Department of Veterans Affairs, not the Board of Veteran Appeals, which is, there's a hierarchy there. So within the board of, or within the Department of Veteran Affairs, they have a very restrictive policy manual. It's called the M21 adjudication procedures that they have to follow, and they have very little discretion. But as you go up the chain, you're going to deal with people who have a little bit more discretion. So those higher level reviewers with the 10 plus years of experience have a little bit more discretion than a rater, not a whole lot, but a little bit. But then once you go up to the board, you're dealing, they are not bound by the M21 policy manual. They're bound by statute and regulations. So there's a little more flexibility up there in the way. And I know that you've seen that with a case that you and I both know very well that you gave testimony on was one of those that we had to take to the board to get any movements. And we were able to get it at the board level. So you just have to look at it and you know, I started to say this before we went to the last break is, you know, this is one of the reasons in which I always tell veterans, do not do this alone. Like, get a representative, work with somebody, you know, a veteran service officer. There's many great ones out there that can actually help you with the initial claims process. Some of them work in appeals, some of them don't. But it's such a complicated process these days, unfortunately, for veterans. We're about to go to a break. We'll be right back. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice on 790 KABC. Stand up next to you and defend her still today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. Welcome back. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice. We are here this evening talking all things about veterans disability compensation claims. I'm here to answer your questions live about the VA disability process. So if somebody, you're trying to figure out how to navigate the process, have a specific question, any of the above, you're welcome to give us a call at 800-222-5222. I'm also joined this evening by Star, who is a paralegal in our office and a U.S. Air Force veteran, so she's here to kind of speak from that perspective. And I understand that we have Lieutenant Colonel Martin on the phone. How are you this evening?
Hi, fourth time caller, and again, you're the best.
Thank you.
I've worked with many people with regard to veterans claims over the last 18 years, and that was my position in the Army. As a family programs director working on benefits and entitlements to soldiers and their families when they returned from deployments to the Middle East right here in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And one of the big things we did was we made the VA come to these briefings and give their briefings. And many, many times they were unprepared to go to this depth. So thank you very much.
I have been to many veteran service officers training. I do a lot of teaching with them. So, and I always like to sit in on the VA presentation because it's fascinating to me.
I still question them quite a bit because, like you were saying on your last topic about the claims handlers just glancing, there was one situation where there was a 5-day negotiation with a decision review officer about the final settlement between 80, 90, and 100%. And the guy on the phone from the VA down in San Diego at the regional office, he said, well, wait a minute, I didn't see that. And then there was a page quoted, hey, it's on page 299 in the VA's progress notes. Did you see that? And then the guy started tap dancing and stumbling through the file, stumbling and bumbling, and he says, I'll call you back tomorrow. Well, the next day, same thing all the way through, and finally it was the negotiation of a used car to 100. But I have a real tough question that even me digging really deep. So I'm retired, 20-year. I have my retirement check coming in separately. I have my VA compensation at 100%. And so I'm currently getting the CRDP, which was, I don't know, somewhere around $2,800, $2,900. And the question was about CRSC because part of my claims were combat related mm-hmm. in the Middle East and Iraqi freedom, and the balance of them were non-combat. And so I'm getting entire CRDP, but over the last 10 years, people have said, well, why didn't you go to CRDP? And I thought, well, sure, it might impact my Army retirement or my VA benefits. Maybe you could explain that to me and the others.
And I'm not going to jump into that because it is not my area of expertise, and I don't want to give misinformation. However, I know you have my email address. If you would email me, I will put you in direct communication with Aaron Drake, who has been a guest on the show before. He spent 20 years as a military attorney, does VA claims out of Utah, and he would be able to probably answer that off the back of his hand. I definitely don't want to point you in the wrong direction, but if you'll reach out to me, I will connect you with Aaron.
That's wonderful. I would like to reach out.
He owes me a lot of favors, so he should be able to talk to you at no charge.
I always enjoy the smart people in the room.
He's one of those, definitely.
You had mentioned that you have Star on the team. Mm-hmm. So where I work is in one of the current Army Reserve headquarters, the second largest in the Army. And we're right here in Southern California. And mm-hmm. we have a chaplain's assistant, a master sergeant, and he is a claims handler in Waco, Texas. And he does exactly what we're talking about every week on your program. And he's argued all types, and he's been doing it about 10 years.
Awesome.
And he was a good source of information to bounce it off of. And you're exactly right when you say they scan through the documents and that they don't look deeply. And many times they don't even understand. Because that one particular master sergeant, he came to me and asked me, could I help him increase his VA compensation level because he was not getting anywhere. And it was a pleasure to help him, but I learned so much from that guy.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. And thank you for calling in. One thing that I will say is that when you're dealing with the initial raiders, they have a certain level of experience. But what always has frustrated me is I went to law school to learn how to apply law to facts and come up with the decision. And that's what they're having people do, you know, that are being trained by the VA. And I love practicing at the board level because you are dealing with people who have that level of experience and amount of discretion. However, if we can get your claim resolved before you have to go that long, because the average right now, if you request a hearing at the board, the average is to get 564 days if you're in the new appeals process. So it's just, you know, it's a large, you know, headache. And, you know, I try to give a certain amount of, you know, compassion and understanding to the people who are working at the VA. But at the same time, the people who are needing their help so much, you know, are needing their help. And so I don't have a whole lot of tolerance for laziness or, you know, bad training or all of those kind of things. Thank you. All right. Thanks for joining us. Star, is there anything you want to chime in on? We're coming up against the end of the show. I'm going to give you a few minutes if you'd like.
I just wanted to bring up just that with the higher level review, just know when you do a higher level review, you can only do it one time back to back. So not that it's just one time at all, but you can't do a higher level review appeal and then another higher level review appeal on top of one. Mm-hmm. There has to be some type of appeal in between them. So just when you decide to do a higher level review appeal, make sure that, you know, you've done the supplemental claims to where you have submitted all the evidence so that when you get that informal conference with a reviewer, you can, you know, discuss and argue the evidence that's already on file. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up is for all the veterans out there, you know, just make sure that you have a diagnosis, go through the evidence list. And a lot of times, a lot of the different ones that I see are denied are because, you know, there's just a missing diagnosis. There's that missing third piece. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it just takes going in, seeing your doctor and getting a diagnosis and using a supplemental claim appeal to submit that new evidence of a diagnosis.
Yeah, and what that's one of those things that I would say that, you know, if you say that just generally, somebody who knows the law or a veteran who knows understands that, you know, by the letter of the law, you don't have to have a diagnosis to file a claim. The VA has that duty to assist in the process of getting your claim. But if you have a diagnosis already, it just puts you much further ahead of the game. And so I would submit those records if you have them. If you're a veteran, like many of the ones that we've worked with that may have been homeless for a while, maybe you're a Vietnam veteran and it's, you know, trying to pursue PTSD and you haven't gotten treatment. The fact that you don't have a diagnosis at the time you file your claim is not a bar to you filing your claim. So I don't want to discourage anybody from filing it, but I would agree strategically, yes, it is better for your claim and it's easier to get through if you already have a diagnosis, especially from a treating physician. So somebody who has been treating you for a period of time and that you've been working with. When it gets into mental health stuff, we've talked about that on some previous shows, that the VA to rate you requires a DSM-5 diagnosis of PTSD, which you don't generally get in your records by just going to the vet center and attending a PTSD, you know, group counseling. So there's nuances to all things when it comes to the law, but I'm always going to give, and I know Star has the same perspective, we're going to try to give advice that puts you in the best position, even if it's the argument of, well, you don't have to have that by law. Well, no, you don't have to. You eventually have to have a diagnosis. But it could be coming from the C&P examiner as well. Go ahead.
I was going to say, one last thing is just make sure, too, that there are time frames for appeals. Like, you have to have the appeal in, especially for a supplemental claim appeal and a higher level review, you have to appeal within the 1 year time frame or the VA is going to close it out and you no longer get that earlier effective date. So just be aware of when you receive those letters and to make sure that you file an appeal within the time frame necessary to keep your claim open.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because this document I'm looking at that I referred to earlier, that is the VA two-pager of your right to seek review of our decision. And it actually says for most VA benefits, you have 1 year from the date of your decision to request a review in order to get the earliest appeal date. And they say that very carefully because if you have been in the system, if you have been working your claim prior to 2019 and you're in what's called the legacy system, there's some different timelines in there. So again, I think we're just wrapping right back around to don't do this alone, reach out for help. We're more than happy to take a look at your claim. Star would be one of the people that you would contact or talk to if you contacted our office at 888-811-0523 is the office line. Feel free to give us a call or visit us at veteranslaw.com. We'll see you next Tuesday night. Thank you, Star, for joining me this evening. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice.
Across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say.